Every 40 seconds, somewhere in the world, a life is lost to suicide. It's a sobering reality that reaches across cultures, families, and communities, including right here in the Bahamas. Behind every statistic is a story, a loved one, a friend, a coworker, a neighbor. This episode of Vital Voices takes us beyond the numbers to the heart of suicide prevention, understanding risk, breaking stigma, and offering hope.
Today's episode of Vital Voices is brought to you by Oak Tree Medical Center and Wellspring Lifestyle Group.
Vital Voices.
Welcome to Vital Voices, the podcast where we amplify the stories, insights, and expertise of the people shaping the future of our communities, our conversations, and our country. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows. Thank you for joining us. September is recognized around the world as Suicide Prevention Month, a time to raise awareness, confront stigma, and most importantly, to remind anyone who is struggling that help and hope are always within reach. Today, we are joined by two remarkable psychiatrists from Oak Tree Medical Center, Dr. Davina Knowles-Robinson and Dr. Tamika Johnson-Dames. Together, we'll explore the scope of suicide worldwide and here at home, the differences between men and women, the unique challenges faced by youth, the role of mental illness, and how faith and medicine can work hand in hand to bring healing and save lives. This is a conversation that could quite literally make the difference between life and death. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So, y'all are regulars now.
We are.
We are excited to have you on. Obviously, September is recognized, like we said, around the world as Suicide Prevention Month. So we couldn't get out of the month having you on to talk about, you know, the stigma, the risks, you know, the difference between men and women, all of those different things, because it's an important conversation. I think, you know, we've had some high profile stories in the past few years of different individuals who we've known have committed suicide. I think one of the things I imagine will come up in our conversation is just how uncertain we are about the full numbers because of just the way things are in terms of reporting statistics, things like that here. But it is good to kind of have a conversation to help people to understand, you know, what it looks like, how it happens, and how we can most importantly try and prevent it. And so that's what we're looking to get out of today's conversation. So we're excited to have you both on to talk through us and talk with our audience about suicide prevention. So let's start at the beginning. You know, what are some statistics on suicide worldwide initially, and then specifically here in the Bahamas, as it pertains to, you know, the number of attempts, the number of successful attempts, things like that? What does it look like? What are those numbers today?
So the statistics show that the World Health Organization has shown us that there are over 700,000 suicides globally annually. And as we know, as physicians, healthcare providers, one is just too many. So having this conversation is very important for us to truly delve into the topic, because we know that straying away from it does not prevent it. So having the conversation, being on these types of platforms, helps us to be more aware. In the Bahamas, the Royal Bahamas Police Force gave us the statistics for 2020. Well, they gave us our annual statistics for violence in the community, including suicide. And we've had this conversation nationwide, trying to remove suicide from violence or a crime, because then that's, you know, we're trying to change the language, trying to change the stigma, trying to bring awareness to mental health. So that is an ongoing conversation in the last week or two nationally. But in terms of the statistics, in 2023, there was 6 suicides and 80 attempted. According to the statistics, there in 2024, there were 8 suicides, so it increased, and 50 attempted. So that number decreased according to the Royal Bahamas Police Force. However, in this year alone, in the first 3 months, we had 6 suicides. So from January to May, there were 6 suicides recorded. So by the numbers alone for this year, we have surpassed 2023 and 2024. They had another statistic done with the Ministry of Health that showed that 1 in 5 teens or adolescents have thought about or attempted suicide. And I think personally, working in the community, dealing with adolescents, that those numbers don't even represent what is true.
Right.
because we see so many kids that have had the thoughts, had attempted, but probably weren't captured in that pool. So, I mean, going forward, I know this is a very serious topic, so we don't want to miss anything that can be reaching out to other kids.
Right. Yeah, I think it's important. I know I saw I actually didn't know that. I saw when the senator was talking about decriminalizing attempted suicide, and I thought to myself, I was like, wow, why would that have been a criminal offense in the first place? And so, you know, it's good to see that there are conversations like that that are happening at a national level. And when you're talking about the penal code, to be able to say, hey, you know, are we looking at this the right way? Because obviously, and I guess we'll get into risk factors, but I imagine if you end up, you know, having to go through a court process or whatever that process is because you've attempted, then does that then increase your risk factor potentially coming out of that? And so that's kind of the concern, I imagine, where the senator is coming from. And I imagine you echo that the same way in from the medical field.
Definitely, because if you're talking about stressors, imagine now I thought about it, I attempted, mm-hmm. and now I'm remorseful. However, I have to go to court mm-hmm. and face charges mm-hmm. because I tried to take my life.
Yeah. And you're facing charges in front of the judicial system mm-hmm. that... Not that they don't know anything about mental health, but you're not speaking to a professional. You're speaking to someone that is duty bound to uphold the law. Mm-hmm. So I broke a law, but I'm hurting inside. Mm-hmm. So yes, I did this thing, but how do I defend myself? What do I say? Well, I was mentally struggling, because I was. Mm-hmm. But do they care about that? Because right. the law is the law. So yeah. It gets tricky.
Yeah, and in turn, it probably will increase the risk of going to attempt again. As you said, we're going to talk about risk factors, but having one attempted suicide increases the risk all on its own. That's the greatest risk factor. So we're talking about decriminalizing. That is very important, because now we can try to get that person the mental help that they need mm-hmm. as opposed to trying to criminalize or put them in prison.
Yeah. I know one of the other, we were talking through kind of the demographics part of it initially, but I know one of the other part of the conversation that comes up is how suicide rates differ between men and women. And we'll dive deeper into this in a little bit, but just from a numbers standpoint, you know, how does that look?
So that's a very good question. It was something that was brought up when we had our suicide awareness symposium that was last week Wednesday mm-hmm. and someone did ask about the differences between men and women. So yes, globally men are 3 to 4 times more likely to die by suicide than women. However, women attempt suicide more often than men. Mm-hmm. So the question was, well, why are the men more successful? And it speaks to means. I don't know if that was a question that you were going to ask mm-hmm. in the future, but typically a man says, I'm done with it, I'm over it. They will go for the gun,
right.
They will hang. Women more frequently, and this is globally and also here in the Bahamas, women more frequently will take pills. Mm-hmm. They will overdose. So when you overdose on pills, there is still time for you to be saved, mm-hmm. right? So someone sees you may be a bit lethargic. They have time to get you to the hospital. We have time to give you medication, mm-hmm. to do what needs to be done to save your life. Someone takes a gun, shoots himself in the head, there's really nothing much that we can do. Mm-hmm. So that's typically what we see. Women definitely attempt more, men more successful.
Right. That's the thing, though. I mean, I think it goes to Dr. Knowles Robinson's point initially, which is, you know, how much of it do we know, though? Like, how accurate is the reporting? Because if it's attempted and you don't tell anyone, then it doesn't really come up on the numbers. So we're seeing that, but then it's still, I think this is one of those places in medicine where it's kind of difficult to navigate, because there has to be some degree of thought of, we might be missing a lot of the information because people aren't necessarily reporting.
Correct. And you know, you just so happen sometimes to see someone in the clinic and you're taking a psychiatric history mm-hmm. or doing an evaluation, and you ask them about previous history of suicidality, and they would admit, well, you know, I did try a year or two ago, mm-hmm. and I was in a really low place. And I would ask, well, did you tell anyone? No.
Right.
I took some pills, I felt sick, I threw up a couple of times, but then I was still alive and I was sad about that and I just left it alone. Mm-hmm. So people will sometimes admit that to you years later and they've told no one, they've had no intervention.
Right.
So, you know, it does happen.
Yeah. And then I guess continuing on that theme of from a demographic view, you know, what are we seeing in terms of young people? Are we seeing any concerning trends amongst younger populations, especially teenagers and young adults?
So like I said, in the statistics done recently by the Ministry of Health, where there was 1 in 5,
mm-hmm.
which is very high because one life, again, is more than enough lost through suicide or even the attempted thought of right. wanting to end one life. So to think of it globally, it is the third most leading cause of death in adolescence. So to think of that as one of the biggest risk factors or things that cause death within the adolescent population, we need to get a grip on it. In terms of the Bahamas, the statistics show that under the age of 45, in 2023, there were 4 suicides, so 4 out of 6.
Mm.
And then in 2024, it is 7 out of 8. So if we look at that as a numbers thing,
mm-hmm.
that shows that we are even higher than the global statistics.
Right.
So that is something that we have to definitely keep in mind because these adolescents, these kids, they're grappling with loss, they're grappling with guilt, unanswered questions. And so those that are left behind are at a stronger risk too, because now they're thinking, well, if this person took this way out, well, maybe I can do it too.
Right.
So we need to protect that demographic even more. Because a lot of times too, we think, what do kids have to even be stressed out about?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are they dealing with to even cause such pressures? But clearly their coping skills result them in right. trying to end their life.
But that's the thing. I mean, and I think we've had this conversation with you guys as well as some of the other physicians that we've had on the show before. And it's just like, you know, kids are essentially just miniature version of adults in certain ways, right? And so the same way, if the kid is in a house where the parents are going through a divorce or where there's financial struggle or where, like, you know, the financial struggle leads to you having to move from, like, private school to public school or from being able to live in this neighborhood to have to move and live in that, like, all of those sorts of things, the child is a lot less equipped to navigate that just from a developmental standpoint, if I'm not mistaken. And so when you think about that, then the coping skills, all of those things, it's not the same. And so while you as the adult might be able to try and figure your way through that, some 13, 14, 15-year-old is not necessarily going to have the same coping mechanisms. They're not going to be able to understand that. And so perhaps that's a part of what leads to it being so skewed to younger. 7 out of 8 is crazy. That's a lot.
And then we have a generation that's being raised by social media and TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
So I have seen kids in the emergency room that said that they started cutting because they saw it on TikTok. I'm like, help me understand here. So TikTok allows stuff like that to be broadcasted
mm-hmm.
to the masses. And they're like, yeah, I saw it on TikTok that, you know, when you stress, you could just cut yourself and you feel better. And I'm like, well, did you feel better? In the moment.
Yeah,
that's scary.
That's the thing. I mean, you know, that I think that is a conversation for a whole nother podcast in terms of just the impact of social media on mental health. I think that's a rabbit hole unto itself that we would need to go and discuss. But it is concerning. You know, I feel like as parents, a lot of times you have to keep your kids off of certain things as much as possible, because what you get them exposed to, it's like, you know, sometimes it's that, sometimes it's they're doing some stupid trend and, you know, the trend is something that could kill you and all these sorts of things. So yeah, the danger of social media when it comes into situations like this is also something that you can't really, you know, look away from. But yeah, the numbers and the risk for our young people is it's very sobering to hear. Especially when you look at it in the Bahamian context. So, you know, let's take a look at risk factors and warning signs. So I think one of the things with a conversation like this is we want to be able to give people tools to recognize if someone in their life may be showing, you know, suicidal tendencies, things that they may need to be concerned of, where they can have an opportunity to intervene. So what are some of the key risk factors to start there that would increase someone's likelihood of suicidal thoughts, ideation, or behaviors?
Okay, so definitely if someone has a significant life stressor. Mm-hmm. So that's first and foremost. A lot of people talk about financial stress mm-hmm. as a trigger, especially if they are in a situation that they can't see themselves out of. Someone that already has a history of a mental illness, whether it's something that's poorly treated or untreated, mm-hmm. undiagnosed, that definitely increases your risk. Substance use. Someone that drinks excessively, someone that's using other drugs, cocaine, pills, even inappropriate use of prescription medications would be considered a substance use problem. Mm-hmm. Someone that has previously attempted, I think we mentioned that before, if you previously attempted suicide, if you previously engaged in self-harm, that increases your risk of a similar thought pattern, a similar means of coping, and also of attempting and God forbid being successful. Mm-hmm. When we look at someone with family history, if you know someone that has attempted suicide, someone that has died from suicide, that also increases your risk. Mm-hmm. If you have any history of trauma, I think we did a podcast a couple of months ago where we spoke about childhood trauma mm-hmm. and how that affects them later on in life. So any history of trauma, whether it be physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, which includes neglect, that increases your risk. We also talk about significant change, significant loss. So sometimes it may not be financial, especially for kids. It could be that you were in private school, something happens in the family structure, and now you have to move to a government school, mm-hmm. and you struggle with that change. Mm-hmm. It may be that your parents are transferred to another island, so you're living in Nassau in the capital, and then all of a sudden they say you have to move to Makuwana. Mm-hmm. So that's a significant change that for the parents may serve them some benefit, mm-hmm. but not for the children.
Right.
Even changing homes, you mentioned divorce, whether I have to be 1 minute with my dad, the next minute with my mom. So all those things are definitely risk factors mm-hmm. that can increase thoughts, actions, feelings.
And you know I'm a mnemonic girly, so to help people understand what their risk factors look like, there is an acronym that we use in the emergency departments to make sure that we aren't missing things. Mm-hmm. And it's called SAD persons. So the S is for sex. So being male predisposes you more than being female, because we've already addressed that.
Right.
Age, so being under 19 or over 45. Mm-hmm. Depression, so having a history of depression. And we'll kind of delve into that a little bit more. A previous suicide attempt is for the P. Mm-hmm. E is for excessive alcohol or substance use. R is rational thinking loss, so you're not focusing or coping well, you might have another mental illness like psychosis. S is separated or single. Mm-hmm. So that means in terms of marital status. Mm-hmm. O is for an organized plan. So if they are on social media saying that, you know, I want to end it all, you see them typing up letters, they have this thought of what they're going to do, that increases the risk even more. N is for no social support. So again, that brings you back to being single or just not having family members around. Your parents have passed away. You mm-hmm. don't have anybody in your corner. That increases your risk. And S is for sickness. So anything like hypertension, cancer, a long terminal illness increases your risk. So those are, in a nutshell, what we look at for increased risk for suicide.
Wow. That's a long list. No, because I mean, I guess I imagine, I think the way that works then, if there's more than a couple of those involved, that shows that there's an increased risk. That's how that works?
Right.
Okay. All right. So, you know, having gone through the risk factors, now let's look at warning signs. So if, you know, you're a family member, friend, colleague, what would you be looking out to say is a warning sign for someone who may be in your circle that says, I think there's something here, I need to get involved?
We typically don't like to believe it, but we are creatures of habit. Mm-hmm. So typically if someone's behavior starts to shift and you start to see that they're more reclusive, they're more to themselves, they're not interested in friends and activities, they don't want to be bothered, that's a good warning sign. If you see drastic changes in, again, their mood, so mm-hmm. some people, they don't become sad, they're more irritable, they're more elevated, they're all like, have this burst of energy like, okay, I'm coming down to the end and I just want to do all of the things. Mm-hmm. I'm giving away all of my personal belongings. Like, it's not just niceness. No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just, you know, do you want this car? Like, you just bought that 5 months ago. Like, mm-hmm. why are you giving away your car on social media? And this is something that I want to peg to the general population, because we see these things and then we talk amongst ourselves and we're like, oh, this person needs help. And, oh, they're, we use the C word, they're crazy, they're mm-hmm. going through. That is a cry for help. These things, so social media, we bash it a lot, but it can be a tool to get people the help that they need. And we miss those changes because we want to talk about them behind their back. Mm-hmm. Increase in substance use. So yes, they might have been drinking before, but now they're at the bar every night mm-hmm. and they're the social butterfly because they're drinking, mm-hmm. but they're going through this the stress and they're trying to cope as best as they could, but it's the poor coping strategy that they're using.
And sometimes it's as obvious as it can ever be. Someone that tells you, I'm done with this life. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of it. I can't take living anymore. Sometimes we take it for granted, especially if it's a person that has said it before, that mm-hmm. says it all the time whenever they're stressed. And you have a habit of saying, oh, it'll be okay. And you don't ask about it again. And sometimes we are afraid to ask because we think that asking about suicidality will cause that person to attempt. It does the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. It allows them to know that someone is paying attention to me. And now I have space to kind of air out the things that have been stressing me out. But not asking and ignoring when someone openly says it can actually trigger it even more, because, hey, I'm telling these people that I want to die and nobody cares.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I think it's important the way you mentioned that, like, if you're seeing some of this stuff and it is a cry for help, then imagine what it does to someone's psyche if they've put out that cry for help and no one actually reaches out to help
them.
And I think that's important, because I saw in a couple of places in the past few weeks, obviously we're two-ish weeks into September now, that same point about not talking about it, people have this idea that not talking about it is the safe way to approach it. And I've seen a lot of commentary, as you know, you guys have been in different places, and obviously different people within the psychiatric field have been talking about it because it's Suicide Prevention Month. And I think that's an important thing to note, that if you see something that you think may be a cry for help, you don't just leave the person alone out of fear that you may, I guess, talk them into it. It's probably how people view it. But like you're saying, and like a lot of your colleagues have been saying, no, that is the time to have the conversation, because that will likely help to pull them off of the ledge, so to speak.
And I think another thing that teachers can be mindful of too, because if we're talking about the young population, mm-hmm. there are some things that they could be mindful of, and not that this child is being rude or disrespectful. If they're sleeping in class, mm-hmm. if they're wearing a jacket in the heat of the day, like, why are you wearing it? Maybe they're cutting.
Right.
So doing, you know, little checks can be very important. If you notice that their clothes are a bit more disheveled, mm-hmm. so showing signs of depression. So I know we urge the parents to be mindful, mm-hmm. but the teachers and the people that they're in more contact with yeah. daily should be cognizant of these changes as well.
And we even have these conversations with pairs. So pair support is significant, because mm-hmm. sometimes a teen may not want to talk to a teacher or talk to an adult. So it's important that we spread the message even among persons that are in that subgroup, so that when you notice your friends starting to show these changes, when you notice that they are expressing things or they're having these maladaptive behaviors, you can help and talk them through and encourage them to get the help that they need. Or you yourself reach out to someone that's older that you can trust with making sure that your friend is safe, mm-hmm. you know?
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 242-8164 OPP 4667 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oaktree Primary Plus, where your health comes first.
Ladies, at Oaktree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI at Top of the Hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram Movement continues. Call us today at 242-32-21145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oaktree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation. So we talked about this a little bit already, but let's dive a little bit deeper. How does the presence of mental illnesses like depression, bipolar disorder, substance abuse intersect with suicidal tendencies?
So mood disorders are twofold. There's bipolar disorder that has, you know, the two poles, depression, which we typically think of when we think about suicide, because that person has the thoughts and the ideations of suicide. It's in, you know, one of the symptoms. However, the manic pole can increase the risk too, meaning the irritability, the increased spontaneity or impulsivity. They're usually more likely to want to drink and use substances like cocaine, which also increases the risk as well. They're heavy spending. They're doing risky behaviors. So both poles, either being very manic or having the depressive episode, puts people at risk. So when we talk about depression, changes in sleep, appetite, hopelessness, feeling sad, feeling like no one is out there to help them, changes in concentration at work or school, changes in energy, those are all symptoms of depression as well. So being mindful of both, and then obviously having a substance use disorder, cocaine, alcohol, marijuana even, because a lot of times when we think about marijuana, we think, oh, it is just this thing, it's from the ground, it's natural. However, it has hallucinogenic properties too. So when we talk about rational thinking loss, people might not be in their clear thinking mind and might do something that they may regret when they are more focused. So all of those things can put you into risk.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing too. You know, I realize when going back to the conversation about the numbers, you know, if you have like substance overdosing, like if that's most often viewed as accidental, then it's like you might also still be losing some of the accuracy of your numbers, right?
I love that you said that, because that is something that we've talked about, like, in our psychiatric community all the time. Mm-hmm. That those things skew the numbers, because if you're thinking about things like accidents, mm-hmm. car crashes, mm-hmm. that's going to be put on the books as a accident. Mm-hmm. However, this person might have been having suicidal ideations. They might have not have written a letter.
Right.
They might have been going through a depressive episode or a manic episode, but had the thoughts mm-hmm. and had not expressed to somebody that, hey, I am suicidal. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be tallied in the accident column, right. Whereas that might actually have been a suicidal death.
And that's the danger when you have someone that's that impulsive, like the impulsivity that you see in mania, because you don't necessarily have time to sit down and process, okay, do I want to kill? No, I want to kill myself now. Bam, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. So there's no time to think. And so we do talk about risk factors. We talk about warning signs. So there may be times where people are like, well, yeah, I know that they had this illness, but I didn't hear them talk about it before. That's because it happened so quickly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even with the self-harm behaviors, the danger with that in persons that say, well, no, I didn't want to kill myself. I just was cutting because, you know, I saw it on TikTok and I wanted to decrease the pain. But what if you cut an artery?
Yeah.
What if you go too far and then you die? That's definitely going to be labeled as a suicide. Mm-hmm. But no one will know that you were just cutting for the sake of cutting.
Right.
You know, so even in the impulsive right. behaviors, it's risky.
Yeah. I think that's like I said, I think that's it's a murky place when it comes to something like this, because I think it's hard to have, like, you have the data that you have, but it's difficult to kind of know how good a picture is it actually painting of the situation that we're facing.
And I don't want to bash it because we do need a starting point. We do need some place to start and look at and have the conversation. But again, the numbers aren't justifying the actual events either. So I'm happy that the conversation is happening. I'm happy that we're starting to do more statistics nationally. But yes, we do need to delve a little bit further into actually looking at what is true versus the whole capture of the events and not.
Understood. So let's go back to, you know, our conversation about men and women. I said we wanted to get back to that to go a little bit deeper. And I think you started to allude to this a little bit. But, you know, why is it that men are often more likely to die by suicide while women, based on the data, attempt more?
Right. So similar to what I was mentioning in terms of the means of the act, but also too because women, we are more emotional creatures at times. So a man that's going through a really rough patch in life may kind of keep things to themselves, not seek help. I find that women are more open to therapy. They're more open to talking about feelings. So if I feel really, really low, I call Davina and say, hey, girl, listen, I'm really going through it. I need to talk. I need to vent. Let's go have lunch. Or if she recognizes that something's happening with me, she may reach out to me and say, hey, girl, let me pick you up and let's go do something. Clear your head. Men, on the other hand, yeah, man, he's mine. He'd be okay. Or I'm the head of the house. I have to toughen up. And then I hold all these emotions inside until I'm really, really done with it. And when I'm done with it, I'm not trying to do something that may not work. I'm not trying to take no pills because I take the pills and then I'm still alive. And then on top of me feeling sad, everybody around me can now see that I was so low that I swallowed some pills. No, men are more likely to go as lethal as can be to be done with it. Unfortunately so.
It's interesting because I wonder, you know, I don't know if there's staging in terms of like the process of suicidal from ideation to execution. But it makes me wonder if, based on the way you're saying it, it's almost like, you know, you have someone with stage one cancer versus stage four, right? Whereas with women, they may have those conversations in the stage one, stage two, stage three, but like men are not, they're not gonna have conversation. They're just gonna, it's gonna get to stage four and it's gonna be like, I'm, like you said, I'm done with this, and it's just, we go in whole hog. As opposed to women who may have these opportunities and may then attempt, like you said, lesser violent means, things like that. But I just wonder how that, because I think it's important to be able to kind of think through the conversation in a way that people can kind of understand. But I think to your point, men, just generally speaking, we are more violent in nature and more aggressive in nature. So I think taking more aggressive or more intense tactics just lines up with our biology, generally speaking.
I think too, it goes back to cultural stigma and biases. If we just think about mental health in general, culturally, we don't even believe that that's a thing. We're finally breaking walls and barriers for people to have the conversation, to have the spaces where we address it as a normal conversation. Mental health is health. In the same way, culturally, and in a Caribbean society, predominantly Black, we don't believe that men should have emotions. If you have any type of emotion, you are soft. And so before I start to talk to anybody about the things that I'm going through, I'm a man. I need to take care of my house. I need to figure it out. I need to do all the things that needs to be done because it's on me. I'm the man. A woman, I'm okay to go and cry to my friend and be like, oh my God, girl, this and that is happening to me and I need somebody. I need a life vest. I need a parachute. Help me. Men are like, no, help me. I help myself. I have my family. Gorilla.
Right. And basically,
me man.
If I get to the point where I can't help myself, then it's like.
Then I help myself by ending myself because no one else can help me. I've already gotten to the ceiling. The ceiling is here and I don't see anything else. So this is it.
And I've heard a man say, will therapy pay my bills? Because I have to pay for therapy.
Right.
I have to pay to see somebody to talk to about the fact that I don't have no money.
Right.
So when I go to this person, when I leave the office, will I have the funds? And if I won't have the funds, I'm not going. Because that's why I stress right now.
Why am I even
doing
this? Right.
Yeah. So, you know, while we may be like, you know, we can talk you through and help you to understand that this is not the end of the road, kind of talk you off the ledge. But some men like, no, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm. No, similarly, let's go back to the conversation around young people. Like, what are the unique circumstances or challenges or vulnerabilities that our young people face in this area when it comes to, you know, what may lead them to ideation and carrying out suicidal ideation?
So if I think about culturally and growing up in a bohemian household, mm-hmm. I don't know if you faced it, but I definitely know my mother was one of those, if you got an A minus, you cheapest you got a C. If I've seen some memes, even one recently from Trinidad, where the guy is like, well, mommy, I got a 98 on my whatever, right? And so then they were like, okay, you did so well, da-da-da-da-da. But I play six. Oh, you're so dumb, stupid, da-da-da-da.
Right.
So it's just like academic pressures are a thing in a lot of Bahamian Caribbean households. And we have inflicted those pressures on our kids. And it's almost like trauma bonding because I try to not do it to my child, even though he's only six. But I do know that there are pressures that you want your child to excel. So they do have those little nagging gnats in the back of their head of, well, mommy and daddy are going to say, or and some parents, myself included, used to get beaten for coming home for certain grades. If you don't do well, like, so in the back of your mind, it's like, I either do well, I get beaten, I cut myself. Because if I don't do well, cheapest I don't go home with a bad grade, I'm gonna end my life. So that is one of the big things. Then we talk about social media, cyberbullying, the pressures of having a Yeti cup or a Stanley cup versus a plastic cup. There was an uproar in the last month back to school. The bamboo shack bag.
And not a spray gram. Are you crazy?
Like, why would that bring so much uproar? A bag is a bag, eh?
Yeah.
Doesn't it carry the same amount of books, pencils, all the things? Didn't it come with a composite book? But no, it's that pressure to have a certain bag. Is it a Kipling? Does it have the monkey on the side? I don't even know if that's a thing anymore.
First of all,
you did I say my age? I age myself.
You age.
You did.
I age myself.
Oh, they don't even know what that is.
Because that Kipling monkey is definitely not this generation.
But that's the point, though, yeah.
Like,
those things have changed over the years, but those things are important to youth. Like, if you're not coming with the right material.
Yeah, that concept of image and identity, all of that is very, very, it's a critical part because you're trying to develop that.
Right.
And so how you view yourself and how you think that others view you becomes a very critical part of your development. And then, you know, your brain ain't fully developed. So it's like you processing the stuff in ways that are, it's not full, it's not thorough.
Right. And so to think, even though I aged myself, I didn't have social media, so no one was recording me have the bamboo shack bag.
Right.
But now I have to go home and watch everybody call me a certain name because I was rocking the bamboo shack bag that everybody knew I got for free $99 and I stood in the park to get.
I don't understand.
And I saw the video with that bamboo shack bag and I'm like, that bag is solid. That has so much stuff in it. Yeah, like that, like, that seemed like a blessing. Bag.
But that's the thing. I mean, you know, that the concept around identity and image, and I think the impact that social media in particular has had on it, because like you said, you might have a couple of people in your class who might say, oh, like, you know, look at Davina, she got a little random Jan spot, she ain't got no Kipling monkey, whatever it is, right?
I had a Kipling monkey though.
Right, but it's like, no, but you understand, yeah. Like, it would have been a very small, tight window of people. But now that is exponential because, like you said, and no matter where you are, everybody has TikTok, Instagram, whatever, and they're posting and they're making fun and all that, and it just ratchets up the impact of it. Whereas it's like, okay, you could always get in a fight with somebody over talking about your Jan Sport versus your Kipling bag, right? But it's just like, you're not gonna fight the world. That's where then it internalizes more. And I think the way things are set up now, it ends up being more internalized than it used to be.
Right, and the thing is that those three persons, that was only lasting 1 to 2 days. Mm-hmm. TikTok is forever. Yeah. Like, that meme is going to go around. And now, because we are a global society, it's not even just hitting Nassau. It is not just hitting the Bahamas.
It's global.
That is now going to be on Caribbean TikTok.
West Indies made, everything.
Right. So now you're on all the social media outlets. And so the cyberbullying, where it was just, if you had one person bullying, now it's
And you can't even say once it's done, because I've seen videos pop back up.
Oh,
and
I'm no. like, oh, years I've later.
Seen this, like, yep. 3 years NCAA ago. Why girl. Is this? Yeah, why is this back on my feet again? Like, this is old. So people don't let you live. They don't let you live.
No, because
down.
What it is you have a new generation of people. When they come onto TikTok, it's new for them.
Right.
And so then it's like it's viral all over again. And we've seen that with a lot of things, like a lot of memes, a lot of things like that. Like you say, you see it once, and then 2-3 years later, everybody's talking about it. It's like, but that's three years old.
That did not
but it's like it's now. Still, like you said, it's forever, right? That's the issue of it. And so you have that pressure is not just in the moment; it's this ongoing, almost like fear of like, is it gonna pop back up again in another week, 2-3 months, years, whatever it is.
And then you mentioned the whole coping skills, like so. The child does not have the same brain as a 30, 40, 50-year-old
mm-hmm.
that does not care. Because now I go to the food store and my answer, this is something my father would have said to me, mm-hmm. but now I find myself not caring and saying it mm-hmm. essentially to myself because no one's really checking me. But when you go to the food store looking a certain way, who's going to pay my bills? I don't care. Like, I don't care if my shoes aren't matching my shirt when I run into the food store. But as a child, that is something that is very important to them. And so they don't have the same coping skills that you as an adult have now developed through time.
And parents have to be cognizant of that. So sometimes because us with our right-thinking brain would say, it really doesn't matter. Like, you have all that you need. Why are you concerned about other people? And then you may force your kids into shame and embarrassment. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's okay to take a step back and say, you know what? She's a teen.
Go match. Go, all right. Go find
okay.
Your shoes
go. Go
match.
Get your. Go fix your hair. You want to do your edges to the food store to go to Super Value?
Just
no
let
problem.
It ride. Just
no
let
problem.
It ride.
Just sit down and breathe through it because we've all been there. But I think sometimes some parents forget that they were once a teen. So it's like some things will not make sense. Does this mean that we should just allow kids to roam freely and not teach them valuable life lessons? Absolutely not. So you still teach them, but in the same token, you try not to embarrass your kids because they're still kids.
And that's an important thing to remember. I think we do often forget that we've been there, right? I think that's an important thing to remember as parents as you consider, you know, your role in navigating and managing your kids. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back. Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized health care with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 242-8164-OPP, 4667, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus, where your health comes first.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI at Top of the Hill, Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram Movement continues. Call us today at 242-32-21145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation. Very quickly, are there any particular socioeconomic or cultural factors locally that might heighten vulnerability?
There are 400 plus thousand people in the Bahamas, but there's only one community clinic, right? So if we're thinking about finances, the access to healthcare is that vast. So someone that even wants to get access may have to wait months if they're going to a community clinic that is trying to service the entire Bahamas.
And that's for mental health.
Right, for mental health, as opposed to trying to come to see a specialist like Dr. Johnson Dames and myself, Dr. Knowles Robinson, privately. Mm-hmm. They may not have that financial means to do so. So that in itself speaks bounds. Mm-hmm. And then if we're looking at it from a more, I guess, basic level, biological factors like mental health, having that family history of mental health issues or disorders influences the risk of a child or another person in the family. So having a parent or a sibling with a mental health issue increases the risk. If you've had a family member that has ended their life through suicide, that increases the risk of that person dealing with depression, having the urges or ideations to also end their life through suicide.
And when we talk about our culture, you know, this is a Christian nation, so I won't touch too much on this because I think we'll probably get into this discussion closer to the end. But, you know, culturally, it's thought that anything having to do with your mental health, that's something that you can definitely pray about. Now, if it's your leg, if it's your toe, if it's your heart, if your stomach or your kidneys, you go to the doctor for that. But for your mental health, you only seek Jesus. You don't seek Jesus and nothing else. Anything outside of that is blasphemy. So some people still think that. You know, and so that is definitely a cultural barrier that we have to break down and getting people to recognize that you can do both.
Yeah. I think that's an important thing to note. And we are going to get into that actually in a minute. You know, looking at it, I think we've covered stigma a fair amount in and out of the conversation that we've had thus far. I think one of the main questions I have there is, you know, what can communities, workplaces, schools, and as we lead into our conversation about churches, even churches do to create safer spaces for open conversations about mental health and suicide?
So I'll finish up about church since I started there. I think, and don't get me wrong, churches have been doing a better job at promoting mental health awareness and promoting acceptance to help-seeking behaviors. I will give a shout-out to my church, the big church, because recently when we had the Suicide Awareness Symposium, my entire church, they wore orange that day. Everybody took pictures, sent it in the church group, and then a Bible study that evening, everyone had on orange, which was really heartwarming to see because churches are now recognizing that sometimes there are issues that do require professional help and outside of the church community, while we are praying for that person to get the healing that they need, we still need to encourage them to get the help that they need outside of church. So I think knowing that your pastor, knowing that the deacons in your church support you getting help is a big step. Because if you tell them that you're struggling and that you're depressed and they tell you sow a seed on it, or go pray and fast, then you're going to feel guilty about saying, well, no, I actually want to go and see a therapist. I actually want to see a psychiatrist and maybe I might need some medication. But if you know that they support you and they're backing you, like churches support people, they go to fundraisers and they raise money for cancer. They raise money for all of these other illnesses.
Yeah, for surgery, for all kinds of different things.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then if someone is having a mental health crisis and needs inpatient hospitalization, do we still go and visit that person? Do we visit them the same way we visit the person that's at PMH? So I think that is a start for the church.
Well, you know me, on any platform, I'm going to attack the insurance company.
Absolutely.
The same way that we cover physical health, we need to cover mental health. How many insurance policies do not include mental health in their policy? Again, if I don't have mental health coverage, that is going to limit my support in trying to get the backing that I might need, because I'm not going to go to the community clinic if I know I have health insurance, but I'm not going to spend an excess of $300 per visit to see a psychiatrist either, because I'm paying $400, $500, $800 a month for my health insurance. So insurance agencies, if you're listening, please start including mental health in terms of workplace environments, safe spaces. We have already gone in depth. We've had already a podcast on workspace and healthy workspace environments. But I would be remiss in saying, just as we have physical health call-in days, we need to start implementing mental health days. I need a mental health day.
And that's being tabled, actually, right, in Parliament.
So these conversations we've had, mm-hmm, clearly on various platforms, yes, some of the noise in the market is starting to, you know, rise up discussions in Parliament. But more of these conversations need to be had so that we make sure that we are not negating the mental health. Because again, the number, they say men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie. And the numbers have been showing, like, again, in the first 3 months of the year, there have been 6 suicides. So we cannot take it lightly.
It's you can't. So let's dive a little bit deeper. I will say this, though. I know we did an event last year in a different forum where we had 2 pastors, a psychiatrist, and a couple of just like average Bahamian men. We did it during June as a part of Men's Health Awareness. But I was pleasantly surprised by the nature of the conversation, because you had 2 pastors who were very comfortable with the idea of talking about some of these issues and saying, you know, we recognize the need at times for people to be able to go in and seek a professional that's beyond the church walls. And I think you're right. I think there are more and more churches that are willing to step into the forum and say, this is okay, right? And I think that's an important thing to note. But, you know, looking into that, how much of a role does the church community play in shaping attitudes towards mental health and help seeking?
A significant role, because, you know, like we said before, this is a Christian nation. So if you are backed by biblical teachings and principles, and you are given that space to express that you're having a mental health challenge without being criticized or even demonized. Because I think years ago, it was said, no, this person is demon possessed. Mm-hmm. So especially when you see persons that may be manic, that may be psychotic, mm-hmm, that may be talking to themselves, right, the first thought was, no, you need to get them, you need to baptize them, you need to get the holy oil. But now the conversation is being had that, no, this person may be struggling from a mental health challenge. Right. I've had in the past persons that presented to the emergency room in care of said pastor. Hey, this is someone from my church. You know, we tried to pray. We have been praying, but we think, you know, they probably need some further intervention. Right. And we've worked together. I encourage them, still pray. Still encourage everybody to send prayers. If you guys want to fast as a body to pray for their healing, that is good. But allowing that person to see that we haven't left you. We're not ostracizing you. You're not an outcast from the church. We want you to get better, and we want you to come back and function in the way that God has called you to function. But we do recognize that prayer alone, faith without works is as a choir.
Yeah. That's the thing. You look at it, and I think your earlier point, treat it the same way you treat any other illness, right? So it's like, yes, you will have some people who are blessed to get divine healing for physical ailments, and then much the same way you have people who will be blessed to find divine healing from mental ailments, right? But on the flip side of that, you have a lot of people who are, you know, at home with their name on the prayer list every Sunday for physical ailments, and they are seeking help, whether it's surgery, whether it's medication, whether it's going to their physician, you know, every 2 months, 3 months, whatever it is. And in much the same way, you will have people who are struggling with mental issues, but we should capture it all the same way, which is you pray, you do the work spiritually, but you also, when there's more that's needed, or when there's the medical approach is required, you also encourage people to take the medical approach. So that way, because, you know, it's funny, my wife gave a talk recently about this very same concept of how you help people go about getting healing. Even when you look at it biblically, so much of what people did when they got healed was they had to go and do something, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you had to go and wash in the lake, or you had to go and do this. You had to go and present yourself to this particular group of people. And so our Bible shows us that there is work that is a lot of time required. Sometimes it's just you just believe, right? But most of the healings that we see in the biblical space, there's actually a level of effort or work that's involved. And I think that's instructive as to how we approach this as believers, as Christians in a Christian nation. When you talk about something like mental health, it's right there. I think there's the Bible shows us that that is the way. And there's room for getting help in what people may view as a traditional medical system. But there's room for it because faith, again, without works is dead. So what would you then say to pastors, church leaders, Christian families who want to support someone who's struggling with suicidal thoughts?
I think Dr. Dames hit the nail on the head. It is important not to just instruct, but it is to be that person that is going to lead your flock. Mm-hmm. So that means going to the hospital with them mm-hmm. is important. If we are calling ourselves a Christian nation, meaning that we are following Christ, the first thing one of the things that he did do when he spoke to the people that were judging the woman, he said, the first without sin cast the first stone. Mm-hmm. We can't be judging people for their struggles, their downfalls, their ailments, mm-hmm. because mental health is health. Mm-hmm. So judge ye not, because if you do, you too may be judged. We're not, no one can escape sickness. Mm-hmm. Until you are dead, anything is possible to happen. And if it not directly happened to you, mm-hmm. it can happen to a family member. So making that safe space for the person to want to come to get help, and seeing that we're bigging up churches, I do think my church, Bahamas Harvest, Pastor Mario, is very good in advocating for those with mental health issues, seeking help, making sure that he goes to those communities. He's gone to Sandilands, he's gone to BMH, making sure that the community understands the importance of the church and the medical profession working in tandem, yes. because one without the other is impossible. We are human bodies, but we are made up of physical components, mental components, spiritual components, and all of that makes us who we are.
So let's move in as we wrap up. You know, especially with a topic like this, I want you guys to be able to leave some nuggets for people who may be listening, who says that, you know, I'm personally struggling with suicidal thoughts. What immediate steps would you say to them that they can take right now?
First step, find someone that you trust, that you can share those feelings with. And if you find that that person is unable to help, if you have access to professional help, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to seek help. Don't think that people will think that you are crazy. If you're at the point in which you feel like this is the end, then you have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. You have nothing to lose but to get the help that you need. Yeah. As we mentioned, I guess we'll leave numbers at the end. There's a community clinic. But even your primary care physician is someone that you could talk to. Sometimes people are afraid to go to a mental health professional. Mm-hmm. But if you have a family doctor that you go to, if you want to talk to your pastor, you can do that. If you want to talk to a youth leader, if you want to talk to an MP, anyone outside of your own negative thoughts mm-hmm. is the first step.
For loved ones who may be concerned, what is it? Because I think this is sometimes something that people struggle with, is how do I even start this conversation if I do feel as though I have a family member, a loved one, a friend, a colleague at work that I think may be considering suicide? How do you start that conversation?
Direct. Be very direct, because I'm pretty sure the person will appreciate you more for not trying to skate around the topic. Mm-hmm. Hitting it head on and understanding and underscoring the severity of the situation. And like I said, you don't make a permanent decision off of a temporary feeling. Because at the end of the day, you can't get your life back. After you made that decision to end your life, that is it. That is final. We don't know when Jesus is coming back, so there's no Lazarus around here. We're not bringing people back. So once that person is gone, they are gone. So this conversation is not something light. We're not supposed to stray away from it and make it seem as though this isn't something that we can't hit head on. Right. So if you do see the signs of risk factors that we spoke about, the person that is going through the changes or the symptoms of depression, hit it straight on. And do not be afraid to go with that person. Tell them, hey, I see that you are struggling. I may not know exactly what you are going through, and I may not be that person you feel the most comfortable talking to, but I am willing to take you to the facility. I am willing to sit with you in the accident and emergency. I understand that there is a stigma against ambulance. Do you know my many patients that I have at the end of the journey that says, you know, I had this negative thought of what ambulance was until I came, I experienced it, and thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Yes, it may be a struggle to get them there, but that life that you saved, and I think I want to kind of end with saying this. Even if you see the signs, even if you get the person the help, and even if that person unfortunately decides and ends their life, it is not your fault. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you only can do as much as you can do. So the goal for you as a person or the family member, the loved one looking in, is to do your part. Right. Feel satisfaction in the realm that I did what I could do. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, and hope and pray, because we still want you to pray, mm-hmm. that this person gets the help that they need. Yeah. But there are going to be times when you've done all you can, and unfortunately, it is not prevented. And then there's a lot of remorse. If you know that you fought that good fight, give yourself grace, give yourself time, and maybe you too need to go and seek mental help. Because like we said, one of the risk factors is knowing someone. So don't put that burden on yourself to say, well, I did it, and they still, no, I did it, period.
All right. And obviously, you want to leave people with resources. You know, what resources exist locally, whether at Oak Tree, you know, with St. Cloud, in the public system, whether that's hotlines, community programs for people who may be in crisis?
So at Oak Tree, you can reach us. So this is Dr. Johnson Dames and myself, Dr. Knowles Robinson, at 825-4674 or 605-4083. That's the Oak Tree East Street South numbers. Dr. Dames can give the Oak Tree specialty center numbers as well.
So that would be 802-9951. Or 605-2030.
Or you can reach us at our emails, drknowles@oaktreemedicalcenter.com.
Or drjohnsondames@oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Or you can reach us on our Facebook or Instagram page, which is St. Cloud Medical. So that's Facebook and Instagram.
And so we did talk about the community counseling center as well. So the number there is 323-3293-56 or 0. So those are the public access to mental health services. Mm-hmm. There is the 911 in case of emergencies, going into the accident and emergency, because this is an emergency. This is not something that we take lightly. So I know the community center goes by appointments. So sometimes you may not be able to wait a week, a month, or whatever the timeline is. It is an emergency. So emergencies should go to the emergency room. Right. There's a 711 number as well.
For and we also have, right. So we also have the National Suicide Hotline. That number is 322-2763. And then the Bahamas Psychological Association has a few helplines. Their general number is 816-3799. They have a number specifically for men. That number is 821-8123. The number for teens is 819-7652. And then there's a number where you can access services in Creole, and that is 454-2993.
Yeah. It's encouraging to hear even just the spectrum that, you know, you have people attempting to cover by having hotlines for different people groups and things like that. That's really encouraging to hear. You know, one final question. As psychiatrists, obviously, you know, you work in a space where you come into contact with this probably far more often than anyone else does. But what gives you hope in the fight against suicide, both globally and here at home?
So just as we listed several numbers, that speaks volumes, because in the last 10 years, I don't even think that there was such access to mental health services. So it just shows that for a tiny population, we have educated our community a little bit more into understanding that mental health is health. There's stigma still, but we are trying to break the barriers. So there is hope. And so to continue to have the conversations, continue to open these platforms, and just be mindful that there are people out there that are trying to help.
And, you know, when we talk about globally, the fact that we do have the entire month of September dedicated to suicide awareness, that September 10th every year globally is celebrated as Suicide Prevention or Suicide Awareness Day. We have the color that's, we spoke about the orange and the yellow versus the teal and the purple. Whatever it is, it's being recognized and it's being recognized globally. And that's encouraging because you know that the fight is not just here at home. The fight is in the Caribbean. The fight is in America. The fight is in Europe. The fight is in Canada. And I love that we're all having these conversations, increasing awareness, because as we know, increasing awareness, getting the conversations going, that helps to decrease the stigma.
So thank you again, both, for being wonderful guests on Vital Voices today. Very important conversation, obviously. We are always glad to have you on. Great insight. And obviously for our listeners at home, hopefully, you know, you've got some information that you can take with you and help either yourself or someone that you may know that you may be concerned about. So thanks again, both of you, for being on the show.
Thank you for having us again.
Awesome. So what we've heard today here is clear. Suicide is preventable and every conversation matters. By recognizing the signs, breaking the silence, and building bridges between community, church, and medicine, we can create a culture of support and compassion. A heartfelt thank you to Dr. Davina Knowles-Robinson and Dr. Tamika Johnson-Dames for sharing your expertise and your passion for this vital work. And thank you to our listeners. Whether you tuned in out of concern for yourself or someone you love, please know that you are not alone. If you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, we urge you to reach out to a trusted healthcare provider, your church community, or a crisis support line immediately. Your life is valuable and there is hope. Until next time, stay informed, stay connected, stay well, and stay tuned for the next Vital Voice.
We'd like to thank today's sponsors, Oak Tree Medical Center and Wellspring Lifestyle Group.
Did you miss a part of today's show? You can catch this episode and all Vital Voices episodes online at youtube.com/@VitalVoices242. See you next week as we sit down with another Vital Voice.
Vital Voices.